From Hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 22, recorded Monday, June 26, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. And now Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100 online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at PETERBLUM.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses TechEd, GPS, and other topics of interest for the second installment of Hansel Minutia.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, of course, in the post-TechEd show. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how are you?
This is Hansel Minutia number two. So you had a good time at TechEd, did you?
Yeah. I mean, TechEd, I thought this year was better than in a long time. I was a little jaded, I think, last year's TechEd and the TechEd before that.
What was so great about it this year?
Man, I don't know, man. The vibe was good. The people were fun.
The World Cup, maybe.
Seriously. There were so many people sitting on the floor in front of the TVs watching the World Cup. Yeah. They set up chairs.
Yeah.
All this way, to come all this way just to watch the World Cup. But the feeling was good. And there was these TLCs, these technical learning centers, where they basically set up a bunch of chairs and couches. It was like they took an entire conference and turned it into a big living room of nerds.
Yeah, I like that.
It was really cool. They used to call them cabanas, but they were called TLCs this time. And I really thought it worked great. And man, I met some awesome people. It was really fun.
It's very cool just to be able to sit down on the couch with like the architecture team and chat.
Totally. It's like a cotillion with geeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone had their best t-shirts with funny sayings and tacky shorts on. It was very good. The only thing that sucked about this year's TechEd, there was no decent swag. Nobody was giving away any USB keys.
Actually, they were.
Really? What did you?
You missed it.
Oh.
It was over near the RD booth.
Okay.
Microsoft Press had a booth there, and if you filled out a questionnaire, you know, a survey, you got the most righteous USB kit. It was not just a key. It was a kit. It had a wireless mouse. It had a card reader. It had a Bluetooth dongle. It was awesome.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah.
It probably lasted an hour.
It had like six or seven different things in it.
That's pretty cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I got no good swag. I was pretty sad.
Oh, well. That was really the only good one. Okay. What did you do after TechEd?
Well, actually, I was very fortunate enough to take a little time off work, first vacation in a while, and the wife and I went down to Las Vegas, New Mexico. Not Las Vegas, Nevada, but Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Wow.
Where my wife went to school. And because it's far away from any airports, we flew into Albuquerque and then rented a car, and I had to do the $5 a day GPS option.
So what's that? With rent a car, GPS, and
yeah,
the rent
I
car?
Rent, I rented yeah. a car, picked up the GPS, and I usually do the Hertz. I do the Hertz Never Lost.
Right.
But what I ended up with was what's called a Garmin Nuvi. This is at shrinkster.com/G75. We had to drive from Albuquerque through Santa Fe to Las Vegas and then out to a place called Montezuma, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And man, this thing is freaking awesome. Have you used an in-car GPS before?
Yeah, my Prius has one.
Okay, so you've got the built-in Prius one, right? So
yeah.
I've got the older Prius, the 2001, and I've been trying to figure out how to like hack into this thing and get the screen set up. But apparently for the 2001, you can't get a GPS. They've got the button for it, but you can't get it installed. So we're trying to figure out how to do this. And I tried the whole carry the laptop thing around, right? I got MapPoint 2006. Shrinkster /G7C.
Okay.
And then I got the built-in, but it's a little cheapo GPS. I wrote an article about this for Coding for Fun once.
Okay.
And there's an article up on Microsoft, Shrinkster /G7D, that tells you how to basically navigate. And the guy in the article actually mounted his tablet PC to his dash.
Cool.
I think that's cool. Awesome. Yes. Possibly illegal in a number of states.
Yeah, I have. I tried something like that a while ago before I got the Prius, and it didn't work out all that well. I mean, you really, especially with the stylus, it's not very safe or practical to use a stylus on a computer while driving. Especially safe.
Definitely found it to be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Didn't feel safe. And then I had the wife sit in the, you know, with the laptop in her lap.
Yeah.
She was definitely not feeling it. And I was really looking forward to the new MapPoint 2006. They had said it included turn-by-turn directions. But it doesn't actually read the street name. So you're just kind of going along, and then you hear kind of a built-in Windows thing go, turn, turn right. And it's like, oh, dude. So there wasn't that real sense that it was there with you.
Right.
And so you've got the laptop and then the big long cord, and then you've got the suction cup with the GPS up on the wall.
Yeah.
Wasn't really feeling it. Now, in this car that I rented with this Garmin Nuvi, the Nuvi, I think it was the 310, but then I went around and looked into this and saw that the 360 is the one to get, the Garmin 360 Shrinkster / G77.
Okay.
And this guy will not only read the street names to you, but it also supports Bluetooth, so you can actually use it as a phone.
Wow, cool.
It has an iPod attachment, so it'll be an actual controller for your iPod.
No kidding.
It's got an SD slot, and you can, you know, talk to it with your computer. You can download, you know, things to it.
So it'll say, turn left on High Street now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
It'll say, yeah. And actually, while I was driving, there were like three or four times it did some pretty amazing stuff where it said things like, you know, veer right onto ramp, stay in right lane. You know, those kind of things where you get onto a ramp and it's like, where am I going?
Right, right, right.
You know, stay on right lane to I-95 south. It was funny. There's a lot of different voices you can select. The lady had an Australian accent.
Huh.
So I don't know how they do that, but they had a text-to-speech with an Australian accent.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. What I started thinking about reminded me of a rant that I had a couple of years back where this little device, this Nuvi, and then devices like it that we'll talk about, like the TomTom, are basically big, giant 4-inch screens with some storage, and they're touch screens, right?
Yeah.
It's a portable screen.
Right.
Why is it that I have so many devices in my pocket that are screens, batteries, and input devices?
Right. I know what you're getting at.
You know
want
what I'm
them
saying?
All to be one, right?
Right. And the pocket PC, I don't think, is that. And I mean, right now I've got an insulin pump with batteries, a screen, wireless, buttons,
right.
A BlackBerry, you know, a cell phone, a pager, laptop, yada, 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 an iPod. Bluetooth allows these devices to talk to each other, but why am I paying for, I feel like I'm paying hundreds of dollars for LCDs.
Yeah.
Over and over again. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
The Garmin has got this gorgeous 4-inch backlit screen. I really feel like I should only have to buy one gorgeous 4-inch backlit screen.
So I had an idea at one time to make a battery belt, because batteries are always, you know, going dead and you never have enough batteries. And you know how they can make these batteries slim? Well, it'd be kind of cool to sort of wrap one around a belt and wear a belt, you know.
And you know, if the action of you walking could charge that.
Now, you know, that would be cool.
There's all the, and there's devices like this. So there's a buddy of mine has a friend of a friend who has a company that makes backpacks with solar panels.
Huh.
You know, so there's all this wasted power out there that could be used. But the thing that I was most concerned about is the, you know, here's a device that's awesome that I want to buy that's $800.
Mm.
And that's ridiculous.
Mm.
A couple hundred has got to be the screen. And then, you know, the storage, which is an SD card or a small hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
I felt for a while that maybe the pocket PC would be that device with a screen that I could use. But Bluetooth allows them to communicate to each other. But what I really need is a device without a screen that will let you use any other device as a screen. So I mean,
right.
A protocol that was like remote desktop.
You need a portable dumb terminal, basically.
Exactly. So interestingly, this is a GPS, and sure, it does all that great stuff, and it's from a GPS company, but this is about the closest thing I've ever seen to a portable dumb terminal.
Hmm.
You plug in your iPod, it shows you iPod stuff. You
wow.
You put your photos and your JPEGs on it, and it turns into a slideshow.
Huh.
You plug it into your phone via Bluetooth, it is your phone. So this thing becomes the upscale, expensive car dashboard that your cheap car doesn't have.
That's great.
Now, of course, you have a shiny car. You've got a Prius, so you've got this. But I started looking around on the net about this thing, and people cannot shut up about this Garmin Nuvi.
Wow.
At 37 signals, which is at Shrinkster/G79, mm-hmm. There is a glowing review. The guy says that other than the iPod, no other device has changed his life like this device. Mm. And then another guy compared it with a thing called the TomTom. This is at Shrinkster/G7B. For a while there, it was looking like this TomTom, which is huge in Europe, was going to be the iPod of GPSs.
Hmm.
But the TomTom is huge. The new TomTom 910 has got all the same features, the Bluetooth, the text-to-speech, but it's huge. It's like an old style. Remember the size of the what are those Macintoshes, the iMacs, where yeah. they were a giant monitor, right? So you look at it, it looks flat, and you look at the side, and it looks like an old Zenith color TV.
Are either of these things useful outside of the car, or do they have to be in the car?
Exactly. You're getting exactly where I'm headed. So the TomTom has that weird shape, that kind of quasi-CRT TV shape that the old iMac had.
Right.
So you get this great 4-inch screen, but then it becomes this kind of lump that you can carry around with you.
Right.
The Nuvi, same kind of size as far as the face is concerned, but it's the size of a deck of cards.
Nice.
So it's like a full screen iPod video.
Wow.
And then you can start imagining yourself picking it up off your, undocking it basically out of your car and walking around town.
Yeah.
Find me the local Quiznos, things that are crucial in your life, like where the local Quiznos is.
And can it be powered by batteries? Obviously it can if you can take it around.
Yeah, it can. I've heard 4 to 6 hours. I've heard 8 hours in the battery. So basically you charge it with your car charger.
Hmm.
And, Garmin UI, man, there's no buttons. It's all touchscreen.
Nice.
And I really, really liked it. It doesn't have the whole shiny Google Earth kind of thing. It's very bright 3D graphics.
Right.
But it really does the job. I found some prices on it. They say it's about $900, which is like about $500 more than it should be. Mm. But on Frugal at Shrinkster/G7A, I found it for as low as $700. So now I'm thinking to myself, for $700, I could get 2 really nice pocket PCs.
Right.
Couldn't you? I mean, what's a pocket PC cost these days?
Yeah, that's about what they cost. Yeah.
So what is it about this thing that other than a bright screen that's keeping me from using a pocket PC? I looked around and I'm just not seeing a lot of great software for the pocket PC that does the same kind of stuff.
This portion of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Codesmith Tools, the most powerful code generation tool on the market. With features such as template-based code generation, a rich integrated template development environment, including statement completion, and a highly extensible metadata system that includes database schema, XML, and many other sources. And now Hansel Minutes listeners can get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100, and just go online to www.codesmithtools.com. And now let's get back to Hansel Minutes. The problem with a pocket PC is that there's limited RAM, very, very limited RAM, and limited storage. So, I mean, yeah, you have SD cards, and you could get, I guess, a 2-gig SD card, but it's 2 gigs, right? So, I mean, GPS data takes a lot. And the stuff that I've seen, you basically have to choose a very small region in which you're going to travel. And, if you just happen to be traveling outside of that region, oh, no, now I got to go deal with this map data, and replace the stuff that's in there.
Right. So one of the things that these guys are definitely doing to make it a little easier is massive amounts of onboard storage. Early GPSs had you downloading maps like before you go somewhere, go ahead and load up ahead of time.
Right.
All of these devices have like 750 megs of built-in storage, big amounts of storage.
Hmm.
The TomTom has got like all of Western Europe installed or all of the U.S. installed. The Nuvi, I believe, has all of the U.S. and Europe installed, as well as the ability to download more stuff. Hmm. Now, the TomTom just came out with a new one called the Go 910 that's got a 16:9 screen that looks pretty hardcore, but it's still fat. It's still got this big fat, this thickness to it.
Right.
It's about $800. It's got all of Canada, all of Western Europe, and it includes a 20 gig hard disk.
Wow.
While the other one uses 750 megs of storage, and then includes additional space for MP3s and stuff like that.
Hmm.
There's a couple of other ones, like the Teletype, it's Shrinkster/G7E, and the DeLorme. I'm not sure how to
DeLorme,
pronounce it. DeLorme,
I think.
DeLorme, Shrinkster/G7F. These appear to be kind of third and fourth, but a distant third and fourth. I know that the DeLorme particularly has got their folks that really think this is the one to get.
You know, we tried DeLorme on the road trip, the .NET Rocks road trip last year.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't doing a good job. It wasn't. And we tried an older version of Streets and Trips. And I think we ended up using DeLorme just because it worked the best with the GPS, like it locked on. But in terms of accuracy, it sort of really broke down, especially when we would get into the cities. Didn't understand cities very well. Maybe that was because of the new construction. I don't know, but we weren't all that happy with it.
Huh. And this was after the GPS has included their new, they turned off the obfuscation that the government used to add to throw you off by 20, 30 meters, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is pretty recent.
This is last October.
Yeah, so I was driving around, you know, in New Mexico, so I didn't have any trouble getting satellites at all, even in the cities with 4- and 5-story buildings. But I have not driven through New York with a GPS. I'm not sure how they do that. They might have something to amplify that stuff, just like they have cell phone amplifiers inside of tunnels.
Have you ever been using a GPS and you put in a destination and it says this is the best route and then you find yourself going through all these back roads and saying, hey, I didn't have to go this way.
Yeah.
And that's been happening to me quite a bit on the Prius these days. It does give you a choice of routes. But don't you think that the first route, the default route that comes up where you just press OK, should be the best route?
Well, interestingly, on both of these devices, and particularly the TomTom is known for this, they actually ask you, are you looking for the fastest or the shortest?
Yeah.
You know, because there's those people who would rather drive fast on a toll road and pay the buck and get there faster versus the guy who really will do anything at all to avoid that and will just take the chances with lights.
Wind through the hills and the woods.
A number of times with the Garmin, I thought was really odd. When I was driving, it actually, in the middle of it, seemed to change its mind.
Huh.
We'd be driving and it would announce, there's a better route. I'm not really clear where it got that, but I understand that the Garmin has this subscription format that will actually tell you via FM receivers where construction is currently happening.
Wow.
Now, this is one of the things that I did like about the MapPoint 2006, but I needed an internet connection to get a hold of. It actually was able to download construction information, and it, on my map, marked in yellow the part of the road that was under construction.
Nice.
And the Garmin has this ability to, and I think the TomTom as well, to route you around that. So one of the things that I think
that's very cool.
Yeah, one of the things that calls these guys out versus some of the just buying some $300 GPS is this real-time updating of this information.
Yeah.
Which starts getting me thinking into what I really want is like Google Earth, right? I mean,
right.
I want a real persistent internet connection. I want the thing to see that my Bluetooth phone is there and download that information over the internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't, because when you're out there in your car, you're out there in your car. You've got the radio and XM radio, right? That's the only place you can be pulling data from. Maybe the pager network. So these guys still use this FM back channel. Because there's so much information out there that I potentially might want to get. Like a mashup, right? We've seen so many mashups that we've talked about before, like on our show on geocaching.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I mash up my information and see, other useful stuff? Like, check this out. Take a look at shrinkster.com/G7G. This is crazy. So one of my favorite websites is called Overheard in New York.
Okay.
This is overheardinnewyork.com. It may be a little offensive to some users because what it is it's people in New York who've overheard someone in New York saying something, and then they just blog it.
This is persistent.info/overplot.
Right. So what overplot is it takes the information from Overheard in New York and then uses the Google Maps API and plots where that thing, that sentence or that little story was overheard.
Weird.
And then labels it on the site.
That's crazy.
So go to Overplot and then click like a, you know, click Chelsea. That's a neighborhood in Midtown, right? In lower Midtown. So then click there and then click on one of the the numbers there, and you'll see someone said this on the corner of 27th and 6th. And, wow, I'm even looking for one that's not offensive.
Wow.
And I can't find one because they're that kind of over the top.
Wow.
Yeah, here's one here. So a little girl on the corner of 26th between 6th and Broadway says, Mama, no, don't walk away. Someone might take me.
Weird.
So that was overheard, and someone blogged it and thought it was funny. And now so here's like a real-time conversation things happening online. And they've gone and they've overloaded. Now, this isn't particularly interesting information I want on my GPS, but it shows that this overplotting of data that I might want, whether it be construction data, maybe I'm war driving and I want to see wireless information.
Hmm.
I should be able to have a GPS that's a big, giant, beautiful LCD screen that can hook up to Google and mash up whatever information that I want.
Hmm.
Why is it that Google Maps and Live.com and Virtual Earth get all the fun? Why can't my device in my car get all that kind of fun?
Hmm.
Now, I tell this to my boss, and he says, well, you're nuts. You're asking for too much. Most people don't know RSS exists.
Right.
The group of people that are making mashups is like a zeroth of 0.01% of people even care to do this kind of stuff. But that really seems like a valuable thing.
It could be used to do some very valuable things, yeah.
I could put my friends on there. There's all sorts of stuff that could potentially be overlaid. You could take a photograph with a phone or a phone or a camera with wireless while you're somewhere. Like maybe how you're driving along when you're on vacation, you stop,
right.
You take a picture. Why can't that then be plotted and put on your GPS? Stopped and took a picture.
So they do have cameras that have GPS units in them, and actually, this has been around for a while.
Sure, we talked about this in our geocaching.
We talked about this.
Talk.
That's right. Yeah,
and you can do basically marking up of that. You can do geo mapping of this information. Take that and code it. Most cameras actually now store in the JPEG what's called the EXIF, EXIF.
Right.
It's metadata for a JPEG file.
Right.
They'll add on, these GPS cameras will. They'll add on the latitude and longitude.
Yeah.
But I want all these things to talk to each other. I've got a Bluetooth BlackBerry. I've got a big shiny GPS and a camera. And none of them chat with each other about what's going on.
Now, we ought to do a show on cameras because there's some really cool stuff out there. You do have a camera that allows for annotation, where you can actually speak and say something that goes along with this.
Right. And I'll get a WAV file next to the JPEG.
File. Yeah. The ones that I've seen, I don't know if there are some out there that do this, but the ones that I've seen require you to go back through all your pictures and annotate at a later time. I think that's BS. I think you should be able to click and right then and there say, while you're taking the picture, what this is. Because that's when you know, right? You don't always remember.
Yeah.
You know?
And why can't it gain from other – why can't it pull from the kind of the ether –
right.
Like where was I?
That's right. You might want to hear people shouting hooray and then take a picture while they're shouting it or whatever, group of people. But maybe there are cameras that do this out already. I just haven't seen them. So.
Yeah, I haven't.
We'll do a show on cameras. We should investigate some of that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's the prosumer level camera and then there's the snapshots, right?
Right.
More and more the digital camera world seems to be split between folks that want a tiny camera that fits in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And folks that want a big Canon EOS with exchangeable lenses and all that kind of thing. And I've noticed more and more that the quality is really amazing on those nicer cameras. But but you got to carry around that big thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have some other things to talk about that aren't GPS related.
Yeah, because this is minutia, right? It's minutia, mostly GPS minutia, but some other random stuff.
Okay.
I told you recently I tried Office 2007.
Yep.
I'm running it at home now. I got it working at home, but I gave up on it at work. It destroyed my work machine, mostly because of some problems with Outlook and some MSI trouble I had. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to show some people Office 2007. I was trying to figure out how I was going to do this.
Hmm.
So I was getting ready to build a VM, virtual machine, and put Office on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I find out that there's a test drive online, shrinkster.com/G7i, that lets you log in to a terminal server session and play with Office.
Hmm.
It's pretty cool. Interestingly, it's not Terminal Server. It's actually Citrix. Remember those guys?
Yeah.
It's an ActiveX control, and then they'll let you hook up to some super farm of machines out there, get your own desktop, and run through tutorials on whatever aspect of 2007 you want.
Wow.
Very cool. Definitely check it out. It's a little slow right now because everyone else has discovered it too.
Right.
But really neat way to decide whether you think Office 2007 is worth trying. I really suggest go through the Word tutorial. Spend some time with Word. That's really the application, in my opinion, that shines with 2007.
Cool. And that's at shrinkster.com/G7I.
Absolutely. So the other thing that I thought that was pretty awesome today, also a piece of minutia, is MSB. I've talked about this before, but now it has a home. This
MSBEE.
Yes, sorry. This is the Microsoft Build Everett Environment. MSBEE. Remember, Everett was Visual Studio 2003.
Yeah, code name for 2003, right?
So this was a kind of a thing that people were doing internally, and you could get on the beta for a while, and then it didn't quite have a home. But now it lives at CodePlex, right? CodePlex is the new open source site that Microsoft's got all of their shared source goodness up there.
Okay.
And it's shrinkster/G7J. MSB lives up there, and this is a fantastic thing. I loved it before. I love it now that it's released. This lets you build 1-1 applications using Visual Studio 2005 projects.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so this isn't an upgrade, right? This isn't the whole web application project upgrade, but this is like, hey, I've got a machine that's got .NET 1.1 on it, but I only have Visual Studio 2005. Maybe I want to build an application for .NET 1.1, or maybe I want to build an app for both 1.1 and 2.0.
That's the thing is if you want to support 1.1 and 2.0, which means XP Service Pack 2, right? 1.1 is now out there in mass. A lot of people have the framework for 1.1. Not a lot of people have it for 2.0.
So you could just build it for 1.1.
Yeah.
And ship it for 1.1, which is what we do with DOSBlog.
And what's cool is you can use Visual Studio 2005 with all
right.
the cool,
nice stuff. So you get all the editor stuff. You get all the class stuff. Designer. You get all that richness. But then when you hit build, this is actually going to use a separate target file because MS Build has this notion of a targets file.
Yeah.
And there's a you can also run it from the command line. So you could have your automated builds target 1.1.
I'm liking that.
Yeah. So if you're a company that's really thinking about moving towards 2.0, but you're just not quite there, this is a great way to give the developers the feeling of the 2.0 development experience, but hedge your bets on the runtime.
Now, you have to be using 1.1 compatible stuff in the framework, right? You wouldn't be able to use any of the new tools.
Right. You're actually going to be building against .NET 1.1
right.
using the .NET 1.1 compiler. So if you used some feature or if Visual Studio 2005 allowed you to add some reference that was inappropriate, you'd hear about it during the...
The new data binding stuff, for example, won't work.
Exactly. Now,
yeah.
Additionally, there's also some verification scripts for FXCOP that are built into MSB that lets you kind of verify that what you're doing is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And MSB really suggests that you use this FXCOP, right? FXCOP is the tool that
right.
the .NET team, it's a code analysis tool that checks for defects and checks for correctness of code. So you are definitely in a weird place when you might be doing either cross compilation or thinking 2.0 and writing 1.1. There's some thought that is involved, but just the fact that I can have a single IDE on my system and build to both is pretty awesome. So definitely check that out. Shrinkster/G7J.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, that's a show.
Fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks for sharing. I'm going to check out that newbie. I mean, I have one in my car, but it's all, we don't have one in the other car. So.
Well, the wife and I are thinking about going to Spain in October, and I just keep having this dream of me walking around Europe with a little portable deck of cards, GPS, telling me where to go.
How cool would that be?
Very cool.
Very cool. All right, Scott, until next week, and for you, the listener, we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.